Hey everyone, thank you for all the talks so far. They've been very fascinating. My name is Asil Sen. I'm a graduate at UT, and me along with my colleague Dr. Aaron Zimmerman have been working on sort of creating a framework for getting the first order quasi-normal mode shifts of arbitrary spin beyond Kerr black holes. We start as we always do with sort of a black hole merger event and just the waveform, and our emphasis will be on the ring down version portion of the signal. Okay, at the tail end of the signal, where you have these decaying sinusoids, is the ring down, where you have these component quasi-normal modes that make up that ring down signal, right? And these quasi-normal modes come from solutions to the Tucholsky equation with appropriate boundary conditions, and finding these modes is essentially solving an eigenvalue problem, right? And so very efficient solvers actually do exist to compute these modes, right? So for example, the Cook-Zelewski solver. Now, what do you do with this, right? One thing that's possible and has been done quite a couple of times, and one example paper is shown here, is that you can do consistency tests of general relativity. For example, in this paper, what they did was they took the black hole, sorry, the gravitational wave signal. They took the ring down portion of the signal, inferred the parameters using what we know about quasi-normal modes, and then they took the whole signal and then inferred the parameters using numerical simulations. And then they compared, right? And they found that if the overtones of those quasi-normal modes were taken into account, you actually get good agreement. Okay. One of the things is interesting about this is that if you sort of start putting in what you call it, if you get higher, better and better constraints on your data, let's say, there may come a point where you find a disagreement, right? And let's say that disagreement is pathological and GR needs to change, right? What change to Kerr, or what change to like the Kerr model of a black hole, or what change to general relativity would that imply, right? You can't do that with a consistency test. So you need to have a test for each proposed beyond Kerr model of a black hole, and test it on a case-by-case basis. So what we need is a general framework to be able to do that. And so we present a general framework whereby for any sort of first-order shift to Einstein's equations or just the Kerr model of black hole, one should be able to compute the first-order shift to the quasi-normal modes, right? And so we'll break it up into two parts. First, part one is basically trying to get the changes to the Tucholsky equation, the shifts in the Tucholsky equation from the changes to a Lagrangian or the metric of a black hole. And the second part is, once we have the shifts in the Tucholsky equation, how do those affect the quasi-normal modes? How do those shift the quasi-normal modes? So we sort of take inspiration from perturbation theory in quantum mechanics. And if you sort of work through the derivation, right, you realize that what you really need is an inner product that is finite, right, and makes the Tucholsky operator, the Kerr-Tucholsky operator, unperturbed, self-adjoint. But specifically in this case, is self-adjoint in the subspace of the quasi-normal modes. So, for example, what is really needed is this equation to hold true. Consider N naught to be some quasi-normal mode, a Kerr on Kerr. Right, so H in this case could be the Tucholsky operator, which needs to be able to act on the left, right, for this term to be zero. So let's say, and so what we need is basically a metric where that's possible. Now, let's say we have a Tucholsky equation with some perturbation, right? For example, you have the Kerr-Tucholsky equation operator plus some epsilon perturbation to that Tucholsky operator, right? Since we're doing this in R theta space, so we have already broken it up into L, M, and omega quantum numbers, and so you have an extra term that tells you gives you the shift of the quasi-normal mode as well. And so you can use this to first order and get the shifts of the quasi-normal modes, given that you have a nice norm that does this. We do have a norm that does this. So one thing that was shown in the talk just previous to this one was that you can do hyperpolarity slicing, right? Which makes sure that the quasi-normal modes are don't blow up at either end, either at infinity or at the horizon. But here is another way in which you complexify the radial coordinate, right? And since you're working with the quasi-normal modes, and you know that the things you'll be sandwiching when you're making the norm are basically the quasi-normal modes for Kerr, you know that those will sort of have this property where there's a branch cut at the horizon, right? And you also know that at a very high positive imaginary part of the radial coordinate, they'll actually go to zero. So if you choose this contour, you'll actually get a finite inner product, right? And also, if you add this term delta to the power s, what will happen is that you'll have you'll actually find that the Pikulski operator, unperturbed, actually satisfies this property that we need. Now, this has been done before, and so successfully, my colleague Aaron Zimmerman, among others, have calculated the Kerr Newman quasi-normal mode shifts for arbitrary spin, right, at first order in the expansion parameter, which is charge. Also have another paper on just the parametric instability black holes and where with hints of turbulence. Now, what we wanted to do was sort of look at the Tucholsky equation and be able to just get the shift in the Tucholsky equation. And once we have the shifts, we can just wanted to confirm that we can actually go through the process of getting the quasi-normal mode shifts from just the shifts in the Tucholsky equation. So we focus our attention to the s equals zero part, which is basically a Laplacian, right, on spacetime. So we just find the shifts in the Laplacian, and we get the shifted Tucholsky operator here by just standard taking shifts of the Laplacian. And then from there, we do go through the procedure that we outlined before, confine the quasi-normal modes. So we chose a particular form of beyond Kerr model of a black hole called the JP metric, which is due to Johnson and Psaltis. And so in that metric, there's an infinite number of parameters that you can vary and get different beyond Kerr black holes. We successfully were able to compute the shifts to the quasi-normal modes. We found that there's some self-consistency here based on where naked singularity should occur and where we find that the quasi-normal modes are actually unstable in our calculations. Right. What we've been able to do is that we've been able to streamline the process of having a shifted, having the shifted operator to the Tucholsky equation and being able to find the first order shifts in the quasi-normal modes. But we would like a more general procedure to be able to go from the beyond Kerr, beyond GR model, right, that anyone can provide and find what the shifts in the Tucholsky equation would be, right? So what I would like to do is sort of outline the process a bit. I'll go through that really fast. But basically, you start off with a beyond GR Lagrangian, which will have the Einstein-Hilbert action and maybe some extra fields, right? You need the extra fields because only vacuum black hole solution is Kerr, right? So you need some extra fields to be able to get some beyond Kerr behavior. Once you have that, and you have the equations of motion shown below, you can then plug in like a two-pronged expansion into the equations of motion, right? So one is a wave perturbation. So for example, you have your background and then you have the waves on top of it. So in this case, the quasi-normal modes on top of it. And then epsilon is basically the parameter that tells you the deformation of the metric that you provided for as a model to Kerr. Now, once you plug this in and expand to first order, you can actually get something that looks like an equation that's just standard Einstein equation, a linearized Einstein equation, plus a perturbed operator, right? So there's an interesting relation due to Wald where there exist linear differential operators, S in this case, SAB, which can take the linearized Einstein equation acting on a metric and convert that into the whole formalism of Tucholsky. Perfect. Whole formalism of the Tucholsky equation and spin-weighted scalars, right? So what you can do is you can just take this equation and act the SAB operator on it and then get what looks like sort of the Tucholsky, the first part just becomes a Tucholsky equation for a new quasi-normal mode spectrum. But with an extra part, which is some operator that comes from your equations of motion, acting on the Kerr quasi-normal modes in metric form, as the metric form of them, not the form in terms of the size, the wild scalars, right? So what you need to do is not only do you need this, not only does the shift reticulous key operator become this portion, which is which comes from your equations of motion and this S operator, but also you need to be able to invert this K operator. And I just want to point out this K operator, what it does is it takes in a metric and tells you what the wild scalar is, right? The deviation of the metric and tells you what the wild scalar is. And so we need to be able to invert that. And so this inversion is not a straightforward process, right? So that's one sort of problem that comes in when you're trying to do sort of thing. You have to do this kind of a metric reconstruction where you take your Kerr quasi-normal mode, you then construct the Hertz potential out of it. And then from the Hertz potential, you reconstruct your metric. And that whole process has to be sort of botched in into this one operator that we're calling K-inverse, and then chained together with these other operators that you came up, that you extracted from the deformed Einstein equations. But let's say this is a lot of work and there's a lot of subtleties involved here. We have a lot of, there's a lot of literature in this that we can bank on as well, but there's a lot of work involved. However, it's not unsurmountable. This is certainly doable. And once you have this shift reticulous key operator, as I showed before, what you can do is you can just take these inner products of this shift reticulous key operator with the Kerr quasi-normal modes in the wild scalar form. And you can use that in this equation and be able to get the quasi-normal mode shifts for any situation. So again, what we've done is basically we've sort of outlined a general procedure to take one from any beyond Kerr, beyond GR model, and provided we can work out the math properly, one can then get the first order shifts to the quasi-normal modes for any beyond Kerr model that is provided. And I think that is all. Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope I'm good on time. Yeah.
So are there questions? Please raise your hand. Please, Rodrigo.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Greg. Good to see your talk because from our results, seeing these instabilities, well, it's nice to eventually, if we see that we are wrong at some point. So I would like to ask you, first of all, two questions. You showed one that you were tracking the quasi-normal modes. My question is this the fundamental one or was this part before? Or the previous one, there was one crossing the line. So this one, this is the fundamental mode, right?
Yes, not the higher vertical. Yes, that's, okay, so I mean, that's the fundamental mode.
Okay, in this sense, I mean, this is consistent with ours because the fundamental seems to be stable. Yeah. You can just follow them. My second question is, when you were talking about the scalar product, so everything that I was talking about, to the spectra and everything, they rely, of course, on a scalar product, as you were saying. Does your scalar product have some physical meaning? Because we try to concentrate in one, which is the energy of the field. So whenever we talk about small or large, is with respect to a scalar product, which represents the energy, the physical energy of the field. So we thought that this was the most physical measurement of measuring perturbations. So because I think mathematically, as far as I know, you can always find some sort of scalar product in which an operator is self-adjoint. So mathematically, you can construct this. But the question is a physical question. So my question is, does your scalar product tell some physical observable?
As far as I know, I don't think there's any physical thing that goes with this. It's a very abstract sort of, at least to me, I don't know if there's any physical meaning to this. Yeah, it's very abstract. Yes.
Yeah, because this is always the feedback that we get from mathematicians that, well, you could construct a self-adjoint operator.
But
then we said, well, okay, but physically, what would we be measuring? And that's why we try to keep up with a scalar product that is the energy of the system, the energy of the wave equation.
Right.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you for your talk. I actually just wanted to say that your talk was quite fascinating. And I didn't know about the problems that come in with these non-self-adjoint operators. Yeah.
I just talked too much. Yeah. Thank you.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I think there's another question as well.
Yeah, another question, please, Juan.
Okay, thank you for a nice talk. So for generic modified gravity series, So if you consider the black hole perturbation, right, like it's not just a modification to the Coase equation, you could have actual degrees freedom. So it's like you add in new field and you're solving coupled wave equation. Have you considered how to deal with that?
Yes. So we worked through this. There's a possible case where, there are some assumptions in our model, for example, that, they're straightforward assumptions. I would straightforwardly say exactly 100% here, but what I would say is that one assumption is that, for example, the first quasi-normal mode shift for the field, right? For the field that you impose, for example, you need to add in a field into the Einstein-Hilbert action, right? So you're adding extra degrees of freedom, as you said. So for that extra degrees of freedom, that the quasi-normal mode that satisfies, the shift in that quasi-normal mode is epsilon squared. Now, if it happens to be epsilon only, right? There may be coupling, but I've looked into what happens in that case, right? But there may be ways out of it. I am sure that there's some way one can make it work. To answer your question, in general, you can add any fields you want, and we're still working through all the possibilities here. So we, for example, chose the example of dynamical Church-Simmons and started to work stuff from there. But I think our main goal is eventually to see more general cases and get to that eventually. I hope that answers your question, man.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.